Welcome along to the Race Post Weekend Postcast. I'm Bruce Newton, and joining me to preview a great day, British Champions Day at Ascot, are from the Racing Post, Keith Melrose and David Jennings. And we are also welcome back to the Postcast, Paddy Powers, Niall O'Reilly. Would you believe it, lads? This is the 10th British Champions Day. And Keith, what would you give it out of 10 as an idea and an innovation?
It would be high. I think you've got to knock points off for, you know, I think the fact that it comes so late does put certain people off. I think you'd give it an 8, I'd say. Yeah, I think it has been an overwhelming success, but not a total one.
Okay, fair enough. I think it's been absolutely marvellous. I think it probably needs a two-year-old race as well, but beyond that, I just think it's really, really good. Look forward to it every year, and it's a real shame we can't be there. DJ, are you a fan of Champions Day?
Oh, I love it, Bruce. Yeah, I think it was a terrific, like, it was all the best ideas are blatantly obvious, and this was a blatantly obvious one that just came together. And yeah, I love it, and I would agree with you. I think we should have a two-year-old race, but there's still plenty to look forward to tomorrow.
DJ, what are you expecting the ground to be like? Because it's been soft all week, but it's drying out, isn't it? Might it just get towards the good to soft, or do you think it'll be on the proper soft?
Yeah, it does seem to be drying out reasonably quickly. So I think it'll just be soft, but not really hard work. I think it'll be on the kind of less hard work side of soft, if that makes any sort of sense whatsoever.
No, it certainly does. Go on.
Yeah, the going sort of the markets at the moment, we're just speaking on Friday afternoon, is that the heavy ground form's really coming to the fore, whereas I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case. I think certainly the later races will probably adjust once we see what happens in the first couple.
Yes, it is going to be an interesting one. And Noel, you were saying off air that this is a real challenge for punters, isn't it? Because normally you've got a few hot pots and you have got some short price favourites here, but they're not kind of, apart from Palace Pier, they're not ones that everyone's getting completely stuck into. So it's a really interesting punting card overall, isn't it?
Yeah, I was struggling myself to narrow it down to one bet in a race. I just think it's so competitive. But yeah, we'll get stuck into it anyway.
We certainly will. And we'll start with the 120. It's the Kipco British Champions Long Distance Cup over 2 miles. And Stradivarius, the mighty Stradivarius, tops the betting at even money. Niall, take it away with the show.
He does, yeah. And this is our offer. It's a free bet in the race. So just to give punters a chance of starting off on a good note. Stradivarius is our even money favourite. Search for a Song is 9-2. Fujera Prince, 15-2. Sovereign, 11-1. Dawn Patrol, 11-1. And 12-1 bar.
Free bet? My ears prick up. Give me more details. £1,000? £100? How much?
Oh, did I not say it? It's a fiver free bet.
A fiver. Excellent. That can't be bad. All customers. We can't turn... excellent stuff. And if we're having a free bet or indeed a non-free bet, Keith, who would it be on here?
I think the way is to maybe play each way. You can say that Stradivarius possibly has got a bit of vulnerability here because, yes, he beats these horses all the time, but the mile and a half experiment has fitted in two runs where at this time of year he would normally have had one. So there is means to go and get him beat. I think he has drifted a little bit. And around the even money mark has sort of priced that in a little bit. I think you can sort of take it out a little bit. I'm putting up Dawn Patrol each way. I think this horse, I think he's a stayer. He really caught the eye in the Irish Derby. And in his last three runs has been upped and tripped. Now, he finished behind Pista the first time in a race that was not run at a tremendous gallop. And then he stayed on as well as anything at the end of the St. Ledger, having let the big players go. He went out of picture and you assumed he would trail in well behind, but he was actually finishing quite well. And then the last time you won a race at the Curragh over 2 miles, and that was a really steadily run race. He won by 3/4 of a length. He was more superior than that. And I think that a more stretching 2 miles is going to bring more out of him, and he's a good each-way bet against Stradivarius.
Excellent. And we've seen some exotic Aidan O'Brien jockey bookings, Keith. We've got Pierre-Charles Boudot on board this time. Is that a positive, a negative, or a par?
Boudot's a good jockey, so you'll see a positive.
Jolly good. Now, on the one hand, I just think Stradivarius is the king of this kind of caper. But on the other, he's got form. I think he's been beaten 2 out of 3 attempts at this race, and he's only won 2 of his last 6 races. So are you for or against the fab?
Yeah, this is a funny one, Bruce. All week when Stradivarius has been 4-5, I've been preaching that he's far too big of a price. And now he's drifted out to obviously odds against with some firms and evens with Paddy Power. To me, it's just reading too much into things. We're reading, as you said, the facts are there. You know, he's only won two of his last seven. He's been beaten in the race twice. But to me, if he repeats his run in the race last year, he definitely wins. If he repeats his run in the race from 3 years ago, he'll probably win too. A search for a song, a second favourite. And, you know, she's an improving filly. She is tricky. Oisin Orr gets on well with her, and he's not on board this time. Oisin Murphy did win in her last season at York. This is like the best day, or one of the best days we've ever seen. And I think the fact that Stradivarius comes here on the back of that arc run where they basically crawled, as we all know. And I would read plenty into Gosden's comments saying if it was a normal arc, we wouldn't have came here. But the fact that it wasn't, and she only had to race basically for two or three furlongs, that tells me that she still has another big performance in her. And like, imagine if you're told after the Gold Cup this year that you'd be getting even money about Stradivarius beating Search for a Song, Fujera Prince, Dawn Patrol. Like, you'd laugh at people. You'd say, this horse should be 1-3. And I just think this is a case of reading too much into things. And I think even money is a great price.
Interesting stuff. Niall, what do you think Paddy Power's approach to this will be, and the bookmakers in general? Will you be trying to get Stradivarius beat to set up a fantastic afternoon? Or will you be very respectful of the champion stayer?
Like, from my own perspective, like, my input would be bigger than what he is at the moment. So I'd be thinking we might be taking him on. It'll depend. There's a few more compilers than me who will have a say, obviously. But I'd be fairly keen to take him on at the type of price he is now. I'm just not fully convinced he's as good as he was. And that sounds stupid when he won the Ascot Gold Cup so easily. But that was a messy enough race. Load of non-stayers and horses who are past it, like Cross Counter. Like, he beat an AF Road, who I don't think stayed. He beat an AF Road again at Goodwood. He's a little bit disappointed in Longchamp. Now, that race was a farce when Anthony van Dyck beat him. They went to crawl again in the arc, went to crawl, but I was still disappointed with him there. He's had a hard enough season, and as you said earlier, he's been beaten two of the three times he's run in this race. I'm going to put up Search for a Song. Like, if you look at last year, she beat Kew Gardens in the Irish St. Ledger. Kew Gardens went on to beat Stradivarius in this race. So, like, you have that form line to go off. Search for a Song has been kind of quietly getting it together this year. Obviously won really easily in the Irish St. Ledger last time, beating Fujera Prince, and probably has been targeted at this late season, these late season stay races. Dermot Weld has a good record in the race. I think he's won it twice in the last 5 or 6 years. So yeah, I'd be keen enough to back her each way if she got out to a big enough price as well. I think she's 5 at the moment. The other one I thought was interesting was Max Vega for Rafe Beckett. Been a bit disappointing this year, but gets soft ground and would be ridden prominently. I just think he might stick on for a place. So Search for a Song in the main bet, but Max Vega each way.
Thank you very much. Now, from the stayers to the sprinters, the 155 is the Kipco British Champion Series sprint. Over 6 furlongs, 17 runners. So hopefully we've got some extra places, Niall.
Yeah, we're paying 5 places here instead of 3. So a decent offer. Dream of Dreams are 15-8 favourite. One Masters 5-1. Oxford 13-2. Starman 15-2. Cape Byron 11-1. Air Power 11-1. And 12-1 Bear.
And as always, a reminder that those 5 places and all the extra races you hear Niall mention are available not just on Paddy Power products, but also on the Racing Post app, where you can study form and place direct bets. Okay, DJ, can I first crack at this? Are you going to play safe and go with Dream of Dreams, or look for a slightly more exotically priced winner?
I'm going exotic, Bruce. I don't think any of these sprinters are actually that good, to be honest with you. I think, obviously, Patash is at a different level to a lot of these. And I just think with Dream of Dreams, he's a very good horse. I don't think he's the type of horse you want to be backing at a very short price in a Group 1 sprint. That's not to say that he can't win, and he obviously justified favourite at Hayden. Favouritism at Haydock, but I just think he's always one when he's favoured to have to take on. I thought One Master had a hard race in the foray. She's terrific and I love her, but you know, 7 is her trip. And that brings me basically going down to the others, to Cape Byron, who I think is the most likely winner here. Now Cape Byron is 6, and you might say, 6-year-old having its first start of the season, but there's 2 key things here. Cape Byron comes in here completely fresh, was due to run at the meeting at Ascot that was called off. So it was obviously fit enough to do himself justice that day. Another couple of weeks here will bring him on again. He's just really, really good at Ascot. He was brilliant in the Wokingham at Royal Ascot last year. He's won on soft ground. He beat Don Juan Triumphant, who won this race last year. And I just think things didn't go his way in the race last year. He was a 9-1 shot and just a little bit too keen and fizzy in the early stages. I think Roger Varian has very wisely decided to keep this horse for the second half of the season, for this race in particular. The vibe seemed to be quite strong coming from the stable, and I just don't think the ones above him in the market are that much better than him, and he's a double figure price. The other one interested in is Lupi Fernandez for Aiden and Ryan Moore.
Oh, I had a hunch you'd go for that.
He'd be my second choice, but I just think with the five plays with Paddy Power, Kate Byron and Lupi Fernandez, obviously he's been a disappointing horse. Let's call a spade, but just when you go back to that run at Deauville in the Prix Maurice de Geest where he was beaten a length by Space Blues, like he traveled so well. Earthlight ran very well in the far eight. Golden Horde was fifth. Wooded was sixth. It's really strong form in the context of this race. So I think if things go his way, and he needs a lot to fall his way, they need to come back to him and he needs to travel. And he just is a horse that needs everything to go right. But I definitely think the two each way plays again, the favourite, are Kate Byron and Lupi Fernandez.
Thank you very much, DJ. Niall, what do you make of the sprint?
I thought it was very difficult. Like DJ said, like any of these could win in a going day. I'd be keen to take on Dream of Dreams. He's drawn in 16. I just don't think you want to be out there. It might be okay, but at the price he is, I'd be taking him on. I'm going to kind of put up two horses. The first one is Art Power. Stay in the Haydock Spring Cup. Now, he ran all right. I'm just not really sure. Like he shaped better than he did the previous time at York, so it was an improvement for me. He's only three. He's got Ascot form, and he's going to be ridden prominently on soft ground. So I'm just willing to give him one more chance. And the other one is Kate Byron, who DJ put up. I think he's also going to be well-positioned, likes soft ground, likes Ascot. They're just the two each-way plays in the race for me.
And Keith, who do you fancy?
I'm going to keep doing this all day with the sort of small stakes, big prices type thing on these races. He can get some funny old results at this time of the season. Kate Byron would have been among them. I just feel that Ascot entry he had, I think they were desperate to get a run into him before this. I think they'll be perturbed that they haven't managed it, but that's the only sort of thing against him. I think Happy Power's the one I'm going to put up. He keeps looking like a horse that is going to be as comfortable back at a stiff six as at seven, and Ascot's a very stiff six, especially with the ground going to be like it is. He obviously has a lot of consistent form behind him, but he's also been going the right way all the way through the season. His last run was only 8 days ago, but he was a relatively convincing winner of the Challenge Stakes at Newmarket. I don't think he'll have a problem dropping back to this trip. And he's drawn in stall one. I suspect they'll come up the middle. I don't know what other guys think, which maybe isn't ideal, but it'll make sure he gets the cover. It's a lot of this will be on where they come up, actually. But Happy Power is the one I'm interested in. At 14's Paddy Power, I've seen bigger elsewhere, to be honest.
Keith, no one's mentioned Oxted yet, the third favourite. Is it just the ground, really, that's the negative there? Because he's so progressive, isn't he?
He is, and he's had a wind-up since he won the July Cup, which is something you can maybe look at and say, well, I'm not terribly pleased about that. The ground seems to be a perception that the connections have about him, but as we've already discussed, the ground probably isn't going to be hideous. And, we've not actually seen him on soft ground since his debut. So if you really want to back him, I wouldn't be getting put off by the ground particularly. He has got the progressive form, as does Starman, really. But, in a race where it's very, very open, those horses are half the price of the horses we've been talking about.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm going to make sure that whatever I do, I don't lose if Oxted wins. This is a real puzzle, the 2:30. It's the champion fillies and mares over a mile and a half. Wide open event, Niall.
It is indeed. Wonderful Tonight is our 7-2 favourite. Dame Malio is 9-2. Antonio de Vega, 5-1. Even So, 11-2. Thundering Knights, 9-1. Medea, 10-1. And 12-1, Bear.
And we'll stick with you for the first tip, Niall.
This would be probably my strongest fancy today. Medaya. Now she's been off a while. She hasn't run since Royal Ascot, I just thought it would be Frankie Dettori has picked her over Frankly Darling, so I think that's a positive. That one run was in the Prince of Wales Stakes, and she's finished 6th of 7. Now, but if you watch that race back, like, she's shaped a lot better than that result. She's kind of finished in a line with four horses, including Japan. At one point, she looked like she might win, but she was just keen through the race. And I think it took its effect towards the end of the race. Like I said, she's been off since that. But if you go back to last year, she ran really well in the Champion Stakes behind Magical. She was just held up, whereas the Magical was prominent and Adeab, who was second, was prominent. She was the only one to make up a lot of ground from the back. So I thought that was a really good run. And that form for me is just way stronger than what these fillies have done. The other one I thought was interesting is Even So back in soft ground. But yeah, Medea for me, she's a double figure price at the moment. I think she'll go off a good bit shorter.
Okay, I have no idea who DJ's going to fancy. We'll find out in a minute. First, Keith Melrose.
It is a really open race, this, I think. And I saw one, though, that the price is wrong. It's not Medea. I thought Manuel de Vega's price was totally wrong. The form from earlier in the season on sort of soft side ground is right up there with just about the best anything has to offer. The last two runs, you know, one was in New Yorkshire Oaks against Love, that's fine. And the last time was at Longchamp where something clearly wasn't right and we're only 2 weeks on. I think but for that Longchamp run should be about 10s, maybe even shorter. You can get 16s of Paddy Power. I just thought that was a wrong price. Not saying she's the likeliest winner, but her form makes her about an 8s-10s chance and she's there on the basis of one bad run.
Okay, thank you, Keith. And by the way, there are four places on this. 12 runners, four places with Paddy Power, so that's decent. Your Thunder keeps getting stolen, doesn't it, DJ? Has he done it again? Nasty.
Yeah. I can't believe it. Well, I kind of can, but I came on here and I was just, there was only one race. I was actually going to say it to you before, and I was like, will you just come to me first for the Filly Mares race, because just in case anybody else tips it, but this is the wrong price for so long. I just think she's, like, these are a decent enough bunch of fillies, but there's no Oaks winner, obviously, in here. There's no real star. And Medea, to me, like, you go to that run at Ascot in the Prince of Wales, like, she hit 2-1 in running in a Group 1 against Coles over 1.2 miles, and she travelled like a dream through that race. That was her first start since, obviously, the Champion Stakes last year. And in the Champion Stakes last year, like, that was a really good run. She was only beaten just over 4 lengths by Magical. I thought she had some good horses behind her, like Real Reality. And just think it's interesting. Like, it's the first time she's ran against fillies in quite a while. And her form against fillies is strong. Like, she beat Manuela de Vega, Vev, and Fanny Logan, I think, was third in the Cheshire Oaks as a three-year-old. She handles soft ground. She likes Ascot. I just think she's been running against much better horses than she's running against here. And the fact that Frankie was jocked up very early for Medea tells me that this race has obviously been the plan for quite a while. And yeah, she's a huge price for a filly of her calibre in this sort of race. I think she's got a cracking chance.
Excellent. What do we think, chaps, about the trip? Because I think she's probably more 10 than 12 was my only thing with her.
I think she's an 11 furlong filly. That's my, I think 1.3 miles is perfect for her, because I don't think she's enough natural toe for a mile and a quarter. But the only thing is, her last run over a mile and a half was at Saint Cloud, where she beat Adisa in that group two. To see it out fairly strongly that day.
That's the main thing for her for the mile and a half trip. She almost over races sometimes at a mile two.
Mm.
Go on, no, you were never going to get first word in over DJ there, but go on.
I had a theory last year that she's a hold-up horse, and I think Frankie Dettori made a balls of two of the rides at Goodwood and then again in France. I think you need to hold her up, and I think a mile and a half, a good hold-up ride is exactly what she wants on softish ground. I think this is perfect for her, so yeah, definitely a confident bet.
Two strong fancies for a John Gosden 10-1 shot. Gosden's also got the favourite in our next race. We'll be looking at Palace Pier in just a mo.
Here at Paddy Power, we're the home of the Money Back Special, with some incredible offers every single week. Check out the website or app today. Terms and conditions apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back. It's Bruce Millington, David Jennings, Keith Melrose and Paddy Power's Niall O'Reilly. Looking ahead to Champions Day at Ascot, let's do the 3:05 next. It's the Queen Elizabeth, the second stakes over a mile. And if there is a standout that all the punters are going to be latching onto, it's probably Palace Pier. 4-6, Niall. Is that going to get shorter or bigger, do you think?
I think shorter, personally. I'll just mention that we're paying four places in this race, which obviously got an odds-on favourite, so it's generous enough for people who want to play each way. Palace Pier at the moment is our 4-6 favourite. The Revenant is 7-2. Maximum is 7-1. Nassif, 12-1. Century Dream, 16-1. And 25-1 bar.
Keith, is this pretty simple? The gates open, they run, Palace Pier powers away from them and wins well?
Every chance. I mean, the way I'm looking at the race is that if you're going to get Palace Pier beat, it probably means the race is going to be steadily run or muddling. I think Palace Pier will be at his very best when the emphasis is on stamina. A mile, I think he's that sort of horse. So if it is pans out in a way that doesn't suit Palace Pier, it's going to pan out in a way that will definitely suit Nazif, who's got a really, really good turn of foot, doesn't need the ground to be heavy like it was when she won the Sun Chariot last time. She's actually been pretty consistent given the right conditions this year. So, yes, it will need to be run in a certain way to really suit her. But if it's running away that's going to get Palace Pier beat, she's going to benefit.
Nazif with four places each way as an alternative to the favourite for Keith. How are you assessing this race, David Jennings?
Yeah, I think Palace Pier is obviously very good and likely to win. You know, are you going to back Palace Pier at that price unless you're putting them in doubles and trebles? I wouldn't. Look, I said at the start of the season that my horse to follow for the 2020 flat season was Roseman. And my reasoning for that was because I was blown away by what Roseman did at Newmarket last year. It was only a listed race, but he absolutely obliterated Century Dream. Accidental Angel was third. And my theory was that when this horse gets a mile on soft ground, he's going to be very, very hard to beat. Now, obviously, Palace Pier brings a completely different level of form into the race. He's rated £12 higher. But you can completely forget what happened at Shanty last time with Roseman, because the ground was quite quick, which he hated. Missed the break, and Andrea Azzetti was never, ever happy. And I don't think the horse likes going around the bend anyway, because at Ascot last year, when he ran over mile two in a handicap, he hated coming around the bend at Ascot. And he stayed on quite strongly in that race over a mile two. I think Sangari has won it. But I think when he gets a straight mile on soft ground, as he almost did in the Queen Anne when he was only beaten just over three lengths by Circus Maximus, I just don't think the ground was soft enough then. But he's a quite a lightly raced four-year-old who I think has loads of ability when it's cut in the ground. It's a big shout. He's 25-1 Paddy Perry's, 33-1 elsewhere. But I do think this is an extremely good miler with cut in the ground. There'll be no excuses this time. And I think he'll run far better than his price suggests.
Okay, that was the latest instalment of horses that David Jennings is tipping because he fancied them about 9 months ago. Niall, who are you going to go for?
Yeah, I just think Palace Pier is a certainty here. I don't normally bet much at odds on. If Medea was to win, I might just steam into this. I just thought he looked a monster at Royal Ascot earlier in the year when he was very good in the clock, and then he backed that up with a brilliant performance in France with some very good horses like Circus Maximus a long way behind. I actually think he's probably the best horse in training at the moment. I'd be very disappointed if he's beaten. I'm normally more confident about backing these when they're trained by John Gosden as well. So yeah, I'll be backing Palace Pier.
I agree with you. I think he is the best horse in training. I think Circus Maximus is the one for the forecast. We move on to the highlight of the day, the 3:40, the Kipco Champion Stakes over 1 mile and 2 furlongs. And Aidan O'Brien has the favourite. Now, take it away with a show from Paddy Power.
Yeah, so Magical is our 6-4 favourite. Mishriff is 11-4. Lord North 13-2. Adib 8-1. Japan 9-1. Skeletti 10-1. And 12-1 Bear.
And let's find out how many of our experts are going to the Mishriff trap. DJ, you can go first. Who do you fancy?
Yeah, I'm falling head first into that trap, Bruce. And I think it's actually a money-making trap, to be honest with you, because I think... I think you've been conned into thinking this is just a horse that's been hyped up, because I think he's a horse. Like when he won,
how's he going to beat Magical? Where in the form book is the evidence that he's got a chance of beating the brilliant, mighty Magical?
Yeah, is brilliant and she is mighty. She's here. I just think Magical. You know what you get with her. She's very, very good. She was given a brilliant ride to beat Gaia. Like, they're rated identically, Bruce. They're both rated 121. So the official assessor suggests they are horses of similar quality. And surely Mishriff would have the more scope for improvement, given that he's only a three-year-old. I personally have been blown away by him this season. I thought what he did at Newmarket, that whole race revolved around Walconig that day. And Walconig was sent off odds on, and this was the Gosden second string that was 10-1, and nobody was giving him a chance. And he went some pace and quickened again at the two pole. Last time with Sean T, I thought he looked better than ever. Yes, it was only a group two, but ground is in his favour. He's been trained for the race. I think he's very, very good. I think he would have went very close in the arc. And yeah, I'm very, very happy to back him against Magical.
Surely, Niall, you're too shrewd to fall for this one, aren't you?
No, I was going to say, I don't think it's a trap at all. Look, Magical looked really good last time. I'm just not getting carried away with it. Like, people are saying she's obviously beating Gaet, who was the highest rated horse in training, but Armory was just a little bit too close for me. I know the French horse Satsas went on and won the Arc, but I just don't get carried away with one performance. Like, if you pick away at Magical, she wasn't that far in front of Lord North at York either. So I think she's beatable. I think she's had a little bit of a harder season than Mishriff as well, who's been targeted here for quite a while. Mishrif was extremely impressive at Newmarket. He's excellent on the clock. It was a very good overall time. He then backed that up in France, winning the French Derby, and then hammering the same horse again in France, just looking like he'd improved. He's won on different types of ground, heavy to good to firm. So this soft ground should probably be perfect for him. At the prices, we're 11-4 at the moment. I just think it's worth taking on Magical, and I'll be doing that with Mishrif.
DJ, do you remember a few weeks ago when we were on the show with Niall, and you put up that brilliant case for that horse, and he had the temerity to cut it, didn't he, before the show went out? Well, I've just been looking at Paddy Power's prices on the app, and as Niall was laying into Magical and besmirching her like that, he nudged her out from 6-4 to 13-8. Was that you doing that, Niall?
Maybe. I had to go the other way this time because I'm sorry my reputation, haven't I?
That's all good news. Okay, is it 3 votes for Nishrath?
It is not. I have looked into that hole, but I'm stepping around it now.
That's why you are the betting editor of the Racing Post, mate. We finally found a bit of sense.
I'd not be surprised if he won, to be fair. I think this is the right race for him. I don't think he should have run in the arc. I don't think he's a 1.5 horse. I think he's a 1.2 horse. So I think he's in the right race, and that's the case I'm going to make when we in the paper tomorrow. I've written the analysis for this. I'm going to sidestep it because I think he's a bit too short in a very competitive race. The horse I will be backing, first of all, is Scaletti. He's very, very progressive. The fact that he's 5 is what's putting people off that, but he's no less progressive than a horse like Mishrif. His last 2 performances have been by far his 2 best. He quickened better than Sotsass at Deauville in a Group 3. Now, Sotsass obviously won the arc over 1.5 miles, but he won it with his turn of foot. And Scaletti started behind him at Deauville and quickened better than him. The 2 of them finished 4 lengths clear of anything else. That's decent form. Last time at Longchamp, he got in trouble up the rail, still got out nice and early, and quite late, and won 1.25 lengths going away. This horse actually could be good enough to lay it down with him, and he's 10-1. I think he's a far better price than Mishrif, whose form is only a little better. It's not 11-4, it's 10-1 better. The only other thing I'll be... This might be extremely stupid, because I've looked through this race and there doesn't look to be much pace on at all. I'm going to assume that Serpentine won't be asked to do what he did in the Derby. That will leave the door open for Extra Elusive to lead. He's the only real front runner in the race, and I really think Holly Doyle should take him along here, like she did to such good effect at Haydock in August. This horse probably wants to go up in Tripping Time if he ever settles. He has got the way of going about things like 1.5 mile horse. He's one of the only front runners in this race. He's not got a turn of foot, so he needs to be ridden to gain a tactical edge. And if Holly Doyle can manage that, his form's not a 66-1 shots form. His form's a 25-1 shots form. So a little bit, because him going away from him is the only thing that's going to prevent Scaletti and Mishrif getting to quicken up the straight and see who's the faster. That's the only way that doesn't happen. So I'll probably have just a little each way bet, or if I can get 4 places or whatever, on Extra Elusive, because if he does have that tactical edge, the price is far too big.
Oh, a 66-1 sus from Keith.
DJ, no, the main bet is Scaletti, just to be clear.
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely.
Keith, would you have a major worry about the lack of pace for Scaletti? I thought that was a big negative, because you've made the point there that they're probably going to go slow.
Yeah, that suits him, doesn't it? He quickens better than other horses. That's his selling point.
Yeah, I just always think a whole up horse, if they go slow, it's hard to make up ground. But yeah, I know, I can see where you're coming from.
Well, it's the old adage, isn't it? That when a race turns into a sprint, the best is to be in the front. That's not true. The best place to be is on a sprinter. And that's what he is.
Interesting. DJ, before we move on, a quick word on a horse who has confounded the odds a couple of times this season. And I just wondered if he might do so again. It wasn't a great ride in the ledger. Pile Driver. Could he have any each way appeal for you?
Yeah, I keep changing my mind on him. I actually didn't fancy him going into the Derby, and obviously nothing went right. And do you know what? Like, when you look back on the ledger, like, if things went a bit differently, he could have won it. I just don't know about these drastic change in trips. Like, do you know what I mean? He's going from thinking he was a St. Ledger horse, 1.5 miles, down to 1.2 miles. These are pacey horses. I don't know. I just can't believe I've gone a whole conversation in the Champion Stakes without mentioning Japan. Kudos to me.
Yes, well played. Excellent. Your loyalty bounds.
Yeah, the stats say that Pile Driver's going to be too slow.
Okay.
He strides like 1.5 miles horse, 1.5 miles plus.
Now, Niall, as you and the trading team at Paddy Power go into tomorrow, how concerned are you and conscious are you of the possibility of Stradivarius, Dream of Dreams, Palace Pier, and then Magical? That fourfold would probably hurt, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I think it was it 2 years ago we did a special at a huge price. Cracksman was the last leg, and we did four horses. We had it for a massive liability. I think Lati Dar let it down, so I'd imagine we'll be doing some sort of enhance, maybe on combinations of some of them. So look, it'd be a terrible, terrible day if they all won.
Absolutely, but you've got a chance, as have punters, of getting out of trouble in the sixth and final race on a brilliant card. It's the 4:15. It's the Balmoral Handicap. Over a straight mile, as always, very competitive and an open-looking market. Niall, take us through the prices and then tell us who's going to win.
So we're five places here. Raik is our 9-2 favourite. King Otiker 7-1. Tempest 7-1. Kate's 8-1. Raising Sand 10-1. Njord 10-1. Alternative Fact 10-1 and 12-1 bar. I came down an alternative fact here for Ed Dunlop, who snuck in at the bottom of the weights. He's always had a lot of talent, though. Seems a lot more consistent this year. Running really well at Royal Ascot behind Sir Busker before winning at Haydock, and then running consistently well since, as I said. He really likes soft ground. He'll be held up and Frankie's up. So there's a lot of positives in this race. The other one I kind of liked was King Otiker, who shaped really well last time. And he's the type that could kind of progress into list or group class next year, which has tended to be the type of winner that wins, or the horse that wins this race. So it'd be Alternative Fact, the main bet, and maybe a small saver in King Otiker.
Thank you very much. Keith, where do you want to be drawn here?
Oh, I love how you've led into that, Bruce. It wasn't even planned. I was going to mention this because obviously people know that I've put up Raising Sand for a lot of these straight course Ascot handicaps of the year. He keeps getting pulled out because the ground's not been soft enough. This is the chance he's going to get. He's drawn in 17, and your friend and mine, Graham Rodway, has done his draw stats this weekend. I've seen them. Using the percentage of runners beaten, which is a good way of looking at draws when there's a small sample. But there's a new measure that we're starting to use, which is the 3-stall rolling average, so that it's not just saying that there's something magical about stall 11. It's more talking about the area of the track that you're drawn in. And when he did it for these races like the Balmoral Handicap, stall 17 was the one that came out the best, and that's exactly where Raising Sand's drawn. Do check out that piece by Rodders tomorrow. I think it's really interesting stuff. I think the rolling 3-stall average of on draws is the way to assess these things, and it just so happens that a horse who's been waiting for these conditions all year, on the day that he turns up, gets drawn in the right stall, and I think he's a solid each way bet.
I wonder if loads of trainers, because obviously G-Rod was in the news last week for saying there's no magic to training racehorses. I wonder if trainers will be on saying there's no magic to doing draw analysis. David Jennings, who do you like for the Balmoral?
No magic to tipping either. I'd say I've got that thrown in my face plenty of times. I love this race because it was the glorious moment of Sharjah Bridge 2 years ago when it was just beautiful to watch. And I love this race, so I've spent loads of time on it this week. And all week I've been keen on Prince Eiji for, I think it's Eiji, E-I-J-I, Prince Eiji. Would that be how you pronounce it, Bruce?
I don't know. I've never come across the word before, but yeah, we'll go with that.
Prince Eiji. I've been very keen on Prince Eiji because I think he's a strong traveller. He's been running over further. And I think in a strongly run mile on this sort of ground, I think he's got a massive chance. You know, when he ran in the Wolverton, just went to the front too soon under Andrea and kicked on and just didn't quite get home after travelling really strongly through the race. I think under a more patient ride, I think he's got a massive chance. But the closer I've got to the race, the more it just seems blatantly obvious that this Raik is way ahead of his mark. Like, I've watched all his videos, I've read all the quotes, and he just looks like a bit of a monster to me. Like, last time, over 7 at Ascot, like, he was only getting going at the line. Jim Crowley had a job pulling him up on soft ground. He's obviously running with a £6 penalty for that, but he's gone up to a mark of 108, so he's £5 well in, and I think 108 could even underestimate him. I just wonder if it wasn't Champions Day, if it wasn't obviously the last race of the day and there wasn't a maximum field, would this be 5-2 rather than 9-2? To me, he looks like a group horse running a handicap, and I'll even suggest he could turn out to be a group one horse. That's how good I think Raya could be. So I'm very much in the favourites camp. Obviously, he's way away from where Keith thinks he should be drawn because he's drawn in stall 5. But I think we could see something special in this finale from Raik and Prince Eiji each way.
Excellent. Do need that draw piece though, DJ, because five's actually not bad.
I just heard 17 there.
Yeah, that's like the number one on the thing. But basically, you don't want to be on the very far wings, and you probably don't want to be like bang in the middle. Middle to high, slightly better than middle to low, but either of them's good.
I'll tell you what, Keith, I turned up at Champions Day a couple of years ago, and they brought the rail right across the track, and the track was only about 5 yards wide. It was extraordinary. And I was thinking, how on earth are they going to run the Balmoral on
just
this?
A very quick thing on that, Bruce. I was in Ascot for the first time 2 years ago for Royal Ascot, covering it for the paper. The biggest shock I got when I got to Ascot was realising that when you watch it visually on television and they split up into two groups for the Wokingham or whatever race it is, they split into two groups, one on the far side, one on the near side, and you go, oh my God, that's a massive wide straight. When you're actually there, it's far tighter. They actually run so close together. It's incredible when they go into two sides. This is obviously a very boring and stupid story, but I was shocked at just how tight it was from one rail to the other, because I presume from watching on television that there was a massive gap, and there's really not. Sorry about that. That was a crap
story.
That's a perfectly
interesting and valid story, DJ. I don't know why you're apologising for that one when you think of all the boring stories you have told on it.
Well, DJ, what did you think of the hill at Ascot?
You don't get the shock you get when you get to Cheltenham, go down to the turn into the home straight. But it is deceptive. It's a bit like Leopardstown. It's a little bit deceptive. It seems so flat on television, and it's obviously not.
Yeah, did you ever go to Toaster, any of you?
No.
Toaster, I mean, when you see that for the first time, Chris Bonington couldn't get up that. It really is an astonishingly steep.
I miss Toaster, actually. I miss Toaster in heavy ground in January.
Yeah.
Only one horse would actually finish half the time, but I could never, because with Toaster I never went, but I've been to Carlisle loads of times, and I used to not believe people when they told me Toaster was stiffer than Carlisle. If you go to Carlisle and see how much they come up that hill, how steep that hill is up the straight at Carlisle, I thought there can't be a track in the country that's steeper than that, and people used to always insist Toaster was, and they looked it on the telly, but dear me, that Carlisle climb.
No, honestly, there's nothing to match Toaster. But right then,
Ascot certainly did surprise me. It's the one thing that I spotted when I went for the first time many years ago.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's why when you look at the 6 furlong, the sprint, there's confidence behind, 7 furlong performers like One Master. Thank you very much for your thoughts on Ascot, chaps. In a minute, we'll get all the rest of your weekend fancies.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back. It's the Racing Post Weekend Postcast. Bruce Millington, David Jennings, Keith Melrose, and from Paddy Power, we've got Niall O'Reilly. We've done Ascot. Let's see what the rest of the lads fancy on Saturday without giving their naps away. We've got Leopardstown, where there is a group race. They're over the sticks at Market Raisin. We've got Catterick. We've got Wolverhampton. We've got Stratford. We've got Ballinrobe. And indeed, if you fancy a bet down under, we've got the 2019 Derby winner, Anthony Van Dyck, going for glory in the Caulfield Cup. So, plenty to choose from. Let's start with Niall O'Reilly. Don't give your nap away, but tell us who else you fancy.
I just have one that I was quite keen on. It's in the 4:45 Leopardstown. It's called Melbournian for Tony Martin. Now, it won this race last year. It actually bolted up in similar conditions, and it looks to have been targeted here again. It's had a similar prep. This doesn't look the strongest race, and yeah, I think she'll go really close. I think she'll be a decent price too.
What have you got for us, Keith Melrose?
On Saturday, it depends. It depends on the price. Red Risk is at Market Raisin, actually. I think 3-1 would be more than fair. I've seen that quoted in places. This looked a really, really good horse when he won at Ludlow in February. He'd been fancied the time before on his British debut. The horses he beat at Ludlow actually had some okay form behind them, and he absolutely smashed them up. So I think this horse is going to be better than that mark. I don't think it's a particularly competitive race, the Prelude Handicap Chase at Market Raisin. And yeah, something around 3-1 would be very much a backing price. Are we talking Sunday yet? What's up?
Anything else you want to tell us?
4:31 Market Raisin, right at the
4:31.
Top.
4:31? Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Did he, DJ? Did you hear him say that?
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Okay,
Bruce,
fair
we'll
enough,
be watching
fair
him
enough.
Again now.
Yes, come on then, Keith. What else?
Well, are we doing Sunday now?
No, we're going to do Sunday after the naps. So, okay. DJ, what have you got on Saturday?
I just can't believe... I was actually really looking forward to Keith coming on today because I read his really good column in the paper today and I was just waiting for him to wax lyrical about Pick Dory, who you've just written the nicest things in the world about and you haven't even mentioned the horse.
Well, it's going to be even money, isn't he? And he's going to win.
Yeah, but do you think he's the second coming, like?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I think he's going to go up single-figure odds for a Cheltenham novice.
All right, that's all right. People like an even money winner, Keith. Don't worry about that. So that's Pick Dory in the 356 at market raising. Anyway, DJ, how many have you got for us?
Just a couple at Leopardstown, Bruce. For the second time today, possibly third time, my thunder has been stolen here by Niall O'Reilly because I think Melburnium, who has a tongue strap for the first time in that 445, the October handicap. Look, Tony Martin is old-fashioned. He's old school. But he still knows how to target races at these sort of races, these big handicaps. And Mel beat Halimi in the race last year off a mark of 77. Somehow was still only rated 81, even though she absolutely shat in the race last year. Really eye-catching run at La Stole last time where she got hampered, just turned into the home straight in La Stole. She's just really well handicapped. She's been laid out for the race. She likes the track. She won the race last year. I don't think she'll be the price that Niall thinks she is, to be honest with you. I'd be delighted with maybe 13-2 or something like that. I think she's got a cracking chance, rolling wheel and rides. I think she's going to be very hard to beat. And then just a couple earlier on the card in the, I better get the timings right, the Killavullen Stakes, a Group 3, obviously, for two-year-olds. Really interesting race. Ontario is likely to be favoured here because Ontario is rated 109. But look, there's a horse in this race that's a bit of a head banger, but he's got loads of ability. It's called Masson for Ger Lyons and Gary Carroll. First time out, I'd heard from the yard that this was their best two-year-old earlier on in the season. Came out of the maiden when odds on was backed accordingly, and it suggested as though he was a star. Fourth that day, so it was a really good maiden. He came out next time, didn't get a great ride from Carroll. Leopardstown again, but ran quite well. And then last time in the Group 1 in the National Stakes, just forget about it, he got upset in the stalls, he lost the head, he absolutely pulled Colin Keane's arms out for the whole race, led nearly going into the final furlong, ended up finishing last at 10. He's a better colt than that. My worry is that mentally he's actually regressed, but I think as a horse, I think he's got loads of ability. And just, he ran in the National Stakes when Ger Lyons' horses weren't running well. It's now a month later and they're back in form. And I think Masson in that 3 o'clock is going to be a far bigger price than he should be. I think he's a good horse and I think he could prove it here. So that's Masson, 3 o'clock at Leopardstown.
What are you basing mentally he's regressed on, Dr. Doolittle?
The National Stakes where he got upset in the stalls. He pulled Colin Keane's arms out. He just looked like he got the occasion. I don't know how, because there was no crowd. It looked like the occasion got too much for him. He got kind of sweated up. He was fizzy. He did everything wrong in the race. And it's just worrying when you see horses do that on their third start. I think that's a fairly valid point, no?
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. Let's get the Saturday naps. And we'll start with Keith Melrose.
I think it's going to have to be one of those horses at market raising, to be honest, if people are doing trebles. Let's make it Red Risk in the 431.
Okay. David Jennings?
I'm going to go for Raek in the 415 of that because I'm a nice guy and I'm going to let Niall O'Reilly have a diet.
Well, no, I might have another one for us. What have you got?
No, I'll take Medaya. 2:30. Yeah,
I'm a nice guy. No matter what people tell you.
No. DJ, you're joking. Everyone speaks highly of you. You're loved. But you would have napped Medaya if
oh, Noel hadn't taken, would you? She's a massive price. I think she'd go off about 6-1 or something.
Okay. And Ryak instead in the Balmoral. Right then, that was Saturday. Let's see what we've got on Sunday. It's actually a good, it's always a good jumps card at Kempton on the Sunday, isn't there? We've got racing at Cork, we've got Kempton with a couple of listed races, we've got Nace, and we've got Fosslass and Sedgefield. Plenty of action. Let's see what the boys fancy. We'll start with Niall O'Reilly.
Yes, on the 257 Kempton, Darling Maltex. Look, it's just worth following Paul Nicholls' horse is blind at the minute. He's flying. But this one looks really well treated. It drops in trip here and it can be keen. So I think that'll really suit. And then in the 332 Kempton, Verdana Blue. She might be short enough. I'm not really sure. But she doesn't get her ground too often and she'll get it here. And when she does get that, she's one of the best hurdlers around at 2 mile. So I think she'll bolt up.
Thank you, Noel. Jolly good. Keith, Sunday bets.
Yes, I do really fancy one in the Durham National, the 4:33 at Sedgefield. We've got Brian Barana in there, who won this race a couple of years ago, the one where Red Giant ran out in controversial circumstances. He would have won anyway, and he won by 9 lengths. He's down to 125 now, having not actually shaped that badly last year. He was fourth off 133 in the race last year on soft grounds. Now, connections are convinced that he wants better ground. His form largely bears that out. He's going to finish quite close up in the North Yorkshire National at Catterick. He fell at the last, and subsequently actually shaped a little bit better than the result at Musselburgh and the Uttoxeter in the summer. I can guarantee you this has been the plan for him to run back in this Durham National. He's 10 to 1 of 125. I don't think he'll go off 10s. I think he'll go off about half that.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much, Keith. DJ, Sunday bets from you.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Nace in the 2:30. It's a nursery, and there's a filly here with form figures of 0-9-0 called Helvic Princess for Noel Mead. But I don't think the form figures tell the story. I definitely don't think she's actually by a faller, actually, at a crucial stage. She's dropped to 63, and judging by her first run in the Roscommon Maiden, she's really well handicapped. She'll handle the conditions back to 6. She looks like a sprinter to me, and I think in that nursery, which looks an absolutely awful race, I think Helvic Princess is going to be very hard to beat in that 2:30. In the 3:05, I think Sheila Lavery could have a star in her hands in Belle Image, who won a barrier trial at Dundalk, then disappointed a couple of times, but looked very good when winning his maiden last time. He's only rated 88, so he's got plenty to find with Snap Criteria, who's rated 103. But I just think Belle Image could be better than his mark. So that's it's obviously not a handicap, but I'm just saying I think he's more ability than the handicapper thinks at the minute. That's in the 3:05. And the final one is in the 4:15. It is the listed Bluebell Stakes. This is a really interesting race. Ennis Diamond is in there. Obviously, the Oak second. The one I like in this is Mighty Blue for Joseph O'Brien and Shane Cross. Joseph O'Brien has some lovely older fillies. He won a Leicester race at Bath earlier on this week with one. Mighty Blue is a similar level of ability to Freesia, I think it's called, or something like that. And I think the race will be run to suit. Big field. Trip perfect, conditions ideal. Mighty Blue, 4:15 Nice.
DJ, before I let you go, just explain something you said there. Not everyone's going to be familiar with this expression. Uh-oh. It's saying winning a barrier trial. What? Just take us through what that entails.
Oh, phew. I know the answer to that. I was worried there. Yeah, it's just Dundalk of this this new initiative, basically barrier trials, where it's just similar to what you see in, you know, Hong Kong or Australia, where, you know, unraised horses run against one another, not under the rules of racing. So, you know, sometimes you don't know what weight they're carrying and all that, but you get a visual of it. I think you can view them online on a couple of different websites. Please don't ask me what they are. And I just think they are informative, because Thunder Moon, of course, is the big one, won its first two starts. But Thunder Moon was very impressive in a barrier trial, and then came out, obviously, and won his maiden. And Brendan Powell, Joseph's assistant, said afterwards, you know, what a big thing it was running the barrier trial that brought him on mentally. It just gives them an education, really, of what it's like to be around other horses, to be loaded in stalls, to be at the races, to be travelling to the races. I do think it's like preschool. You know what I mean? It's not the real thing, but it just sets you up for the real thing.
Excellent stuff.
I would argue it's better than preschool, actually, because the barrier trials weren't they designed, DJ, so they could sell horses to Hong Kong?
Yes.
Yeah, so those horses are there to have a go. They're not there for a bit of schooling. Those horses are often there to have a go, so they can be really indicative.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your expertise today, Niall and Keith, and also DJ. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, if you enjoy the shows, please make sure you rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening. It's a great Saturday of racing at Ascot, but do please bet responsibly. Hope you manage to get a few winners, and hope you can join us also next Friday when we will be previewing another great weekend featuring the Vertem Futurity at Doncaster, and for Jumps fans, they're racing at Cheltenham, so please join us for that. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and thanks for joining us on the Racing Postcast.
Paddy Power are streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.